This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
From David in Potomac, David writes, Kevin, I've been listening to you for years, one of the reasons being your interviewing ability. Well, that's nice, David. However, David writes, I was very disappointed in the Ted Leonsis interview. You missed on asking him several things, the most notable being whether or not he was a potential buyer of the Washington Nationals. David, you're right. I had that on my list. I did. I didn't ask him that. There were a couple of others, too. Look, Ted is, you know, long and thoughtful in his answers and wants to get a lot out. And, you know, this was never going to be, I think, one of the things they were concerned about at some point, maybe, was it was going to be some sort of gotcha, which just wouldn't have ever been that. But I really thought the generosity of time. I mean, we talked for an hour and a half. I mean, I ended up editing some of it down to make it like about an hour and 15 minutes. And there were a lot of things to cover that are interesting to fans. But that one, 100%. 100%. At the end of it, I'm like, GD, I meant to ask that, and I did not get to it. I did get to a lot, and he answered a lot. I wanted to play, I played a chunk of yesterday about sort of how he was dealing with the Wizards' prolific losing right now, but it's part of their intention, the process. You heard a lot of what he said about that. Today, I wanted you to hear a couple of things. One, his relationship with Alex Ovechkin. He did not score last night, by the way, in the loss to the Blues. Ovechkin goalless for the first time in, what, eight games? He had, I think he, or nine games? He had eight goals in eight games during that stretch. I think he was goalless in some of those games because he had the hat trick, but I think he had eight goals in eight games. Did not have a goal last night. That's my point. They did lose to St. Louis, two losses in a row, Calgary and St. Louis, back-to-back. But I asked him about his relationship with Ovechkin and how he would describe it. Has it ever been strained? Are they close? We talked about the NBA All-Star, you know, situation. Did he learn anything as an NBA and NHL owner? And then I asked him about the Potomac Yards, you know, intention to move. How did he deal with, did he expect kind of the backlash? So here's how that part of the interview went. What's your relationship been like with Alex over the years? Give us a sense of, you know, owner, greatest goal scorer of all time, relationship. You know, has it been close? Has it ever been strained? Just give us a sense of that.
I think we've handled the relationship in the right way, in that you can't get overly buddy-buddy. But Alex has been respectful. He's never asked to meet with me to say, trade this player, fire this coach. It's always been hey, I want to win. Tell me what we're going to do to improve. Do you want to hear my ideas on what we need? But it hasn't been. I go to dinner with him, you know, or we hang out on the road. I promise his family, his mom and dad, his dad, God rest his soul, was a really great guy. And you'd have to speak through translators. And then remember, his mother became his agent, that we would be in this together, and that we wanted to create a situation that Alex could be the best player, the best father, the best husband, the best breadwinner possible, and that he had to feel that the city was behind him, the fans were behind him, the organization was behind him, and there was a responsibility on him. Play hard all the time. I mean, the Russian machine never breaks. He's been available to us 94% of the time.
Right.
He is the most reliable player, maybe in the history of all sport. Right? The man plays all the time, and you know he's earned this opportunity to break this record. And why no one thought he could do it was the intensity in his game and how he hits. He still, when he wants now, can separate a player from the puck. And you know, the man's just been a phenomenon, and his energy and leadership as our captain has been just exemplar in the league. And, you know, the league and Wayne Gretzky, who I have spent a lot of time with, is incredibly, he is the classiest athlete imaginable.
Right.
And he says, because when he broke Gordie Howe's records, Gordie Howe was there for him, and Wayne's dad told him, someone one day will break your record, and you should be appreciative and supportive and a part of the process because you're handing down this great tradition.
Right.
And whoever does break your record is going to be worthy of it. It's not like a fluke, right? This is a body of work. And so Wayne talks to Alex all the time. I don't think Alex thought until about a year ago that he could do it. He wasn't focused on it. He didn't want to jinx it. But I do think last year, you kind of do the math, and it was like, yeah, if I can get 20, 30, 40 goals a year, yeah, I'll get this record. But I don't want to do it as a sideshow. I want it to be in context with a good team. And so here we are. He could break the record, and we have the most points in the NHL. So
yep.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Considering two things, one, Gretzky's all-time popularity among NHL fans, and that Alex is Russian, how will it be received when he breaks the record?
I think none of that matters. I think it's, you know, you'll hear he'll score an empty net goal, and it'll be, you know, the goal should have an asterisk around it. You go, well, you know what? Alex missed a whole bunch of time. Jaromír Jágr missed a whole bunch of time with lockouts, playing overseas. I think that the body of work speaks for itself. I think Alex is, you know, best-selling merchandise. I think he's one of the more popular players in the league history. I think he's certainly over the last 20 years number one, number two, most popular. And you know, he and Sidney Crosby changed the face of the NHL. You have to give both of them credit. You know, the analogy of they're like Larry Bird and Magic coming in at the same time, big rivals growing into huge mutual respect for one another. You remember where the NHL was. You know, we had a lockout.
Yeah.
There was no salary cap. And now the NHL, you saw it in the Four Nations, unbelievably popular, unbelievably compelling entertainment. I thought the two games, U.S. versus Canada on ABC and then ESPN, I thought those were really great moments to build off of for the league. And you know, hockey players, their competitiveness, they're wanting to win for their country, they're wanting to win for their team. It just comes through the screen, it comes through your iPhone, it certainly comes through when you come to a game. Sunday's game was as loud as any game that we've had. And you know, people just want to be able to say, I was there when. And that's been the great thing about Alex. It's like every moment has a feel when he has the puck of a kind of a big event, something big, important is going to happen. And so the drama, the demand for, you know, the rest of the games this season, and if it goes in the next season, I think is going to be just sky high.
All right, you mentioned the Four Nations and the success of it and the player commitment to it. As an NBA owner, what, if anything, did you take from that experience that you think can perhaps aid in fixing, you know, the NBA All-Star Weekend, the game?
Yeah. You know, it's kind of apples and oranges because...
Yes. One's a tournament, one's a game. Yeah.
Yeah, the NHL All-Star Weekend has been heavily criticized. Why? Because no one plays defense, and there's no hitting. It's not hockey.
Right.
And I do think that the union and the NHL did something great here to take advantage of when was the last time Canada played the U.S. in the Olympics and a world championship.
It was like 9 years, right? Wasn't it 2016?
Yeah, a decade ago, exactly. Yeah. And so there was this pent-up demand for it, and ABC owns ESPN, or ESPN owns ABC, Disney, and that game on Saturday night was on ABC, available to everybody. And 9 seconds into the game, there was a fight. And it wasn't theater. It was, we want to send a signal to you that this is not an exhibition tournament. This
right.
is a real game. Our lives depend on this. Our reputations depend on it. And at the same time, and I'll note, it's the first time I haven't been to an NBA All-Star game in forever. And first time I got to spend Valentine's Day with my wife because just of the schedule. And so I'm watching on television the Four Nations, and then I'm watching the three-point shooting contest and the dunk contest. And the three-point shooting contest is in Golden State, and Steph Curry is the best shooter on the planet. And he showed that in the Olympics, right? In Paris. He was unconscious. But he's not participating in the three-point shooting contest. And he's not participating in shooting against a WNBA player. And so there's other players. And, you know, it was compelling and good. It was like any other three-point shooting exhibition. They're not fighting for anything. You know, they're not going to be on their wiki page. There'll be a little entry that says they won the three-point shooting contest. But it was entertainment. It wasn't basketball. But it was juxtaposed against, like, world-class competition.
Right. So, what's the solution? What's the solution in the NBA?
So, you know, I don't have, like, a big say in it, but here's what I believe. I believe that the NBA is the, and basketball, basketball is the second most engaged sport on the planet.
After soccer.
2 billion, yep, 2 billion people around the world. Mm-hmm. They want to watch, they want to play, they have a family member that's engaged in it, the school they go to. Basketball is central to their time. And we have NBA Africa. We've been talking about NBA Europe. There's NBA China. There's the G League. There's the WNBA. It is a global sport. And it probably makes sense if you look 20 years down the road, the next 25 years, there should be NBA in Europe, NBA in Africa, NBA in China, NBA in North America. And then one day there should be a true world champion. So having some kind of tournament, 40% of the players in the NBA today were not born
right.
in the U.S.
Right.
So I do think that there is some precedent for this. The issue is we already have a tournament, right, that we've built in season
yeah.
for the networks. And do the players want to play a regular season, a in-season tournament where there's money and pride at stake?
Well, it's also a part of the regular season 82.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like you're adding games to it, with the exception of, I guess, the two championship participants.
Yep. Yep. And then have a tournament around the All-Star game, and then the playoffs. That's a lot of basketball. So it probably, there's a challenge there, and the union and the players and the best players in the world have to say, this is important to us in growing the game. And I do think that, you know, the current generation of players, the big stars, they've already conquered the world, right? LeBron's already conquered the world. Steph Curry's already conquered the world. But the next generation of player, I do think, could be very, very interested in seeing a Europe team, or, you know, they chop up the world into different segments of the country and play against the U.S. And then it almost becomes different styles, too. You know, it's a lot of talk right now about who are better fundamental players.
Yeah, of course.
Players that play in the NCAA yep. or players that play in Europe, right?
Right.
And so it'll be, but Adam Silver, Gary Bettman, these are great executives, great leaders. And they're running like Fortune 500 mega companies, you know, with hundreds of billions and more kind of collective value.
Yeah.
And I do think that the NHL got a big, huge win. And I'm hoping they can replicate it, but it'll be very helpful to the league as we go into our next media negotiation.
Yeah, with 9 million people watching it. Yeah. That'll help.
So you
said something. I mean, when you talked about, you know, they've conquered the world, the stars, LeBron, Steph, etc. And it sounds to me like you probably agree with me. And my take on this, very simply put, is the NHL got it right, but they also had total player buy-in. And the truth of the matter is, today's generation of NBA players can't be bothered with this. It's not important to them. So no matter what you put together for this generation of NBA players, I don't think it would succeed. And it sounds to me like you would lean in that direction. Fair or not?
Well, you know, a lot of people thought that about the in-season tournament.
Right.
And the in-season tournament became really, really important. And I'll never forget Giannis in Milwaukee talking about, this tournament is important to us, but you know what's really important too? The younger players are the players at the end of the bench because they're making league minimum. And they could, if we win the tournament, get $1 million. And you know what? That's significant to them. And let's go win this for them. And the competitiveness in the tournament was really, really great. And it's just what will be the motivation for them to want to play? Because some NHL players got hurt, right?
Yeah.
One of the reasons that
some of them played hurt.
Yes. One of the reasons that owners sometimes don't like the Olympics is, well, they're going to play. They're under contract with us. You get insurance. But if they get hurt and they miss the rest of the season, it's our fans, it's our franchise that takes the big whiff, not the Olympics, right? It's not like the Olympics are a charitable organization. And, you know, we would send in the NHL to the Winter Olympics $500 million worth of contracts. And we'd shut the league down for a couple of weeks, right? But the players... the players in collective bargaining and atmospherically say, we love the experience of playing for our country. You talk to tennis players, and they say, we play for ourselves all the time. We eat what we kill. But boy, Davis Cup, the Olympics, when you're playing for your country, there's something magical about that. Now, the Olympics is every 4 years, right? And how will we fit this in all the time? I think the NHL caught lightning in a bottle a little bit, you know, in that it hadn't been in 10 years. But also we had, you know, the Tkachuk brothers, right, who really, really cared. This, you heard their father say, this is the most important game of your life, right? Holy mackerel.
I think they're a different breed, hockey players. I hear you on the in-season tournament, but those are regular season games. You know, they're real games. They count in the standings and the whole thing. I would love to see that weekend, last weekend, become significant on the sports calendar again, because it's not as significant as it was, you know, 10 years ago. Certainly not, you know, when I was, you couldn't wait for All-Star Weekend, which seems like, you know, years ago now. Let's talk a little bit about...
If LeBron went into the dunk contest and Steph was in the three-point shooting contest, because that's, right, I mean, you remember Larry Bird in the three-point shooting contest.
Sure.
Who's playing for second? That's one of the great lines of trash talk of all time, right?
Yep.
And I mean, it built his legacy, right? Now, we had, at the dunk contest, Mac McClung, right? He's from Virginia.
Yeah,
he went to Georgetown.
Briefly.
He's a wonderful guy. He's played one NBA game. And he's the three-time dunk contest winner. Not Michael Jordan, right? Michael Jordan versus Dominique, right? Vince Carter. You had the best players who had the most hops. So maybe that is something that we need to get back to, the way the best players say, this is important to the fans, this is important to the networks. And you know what? They show clips all the time of Michael Jordan's dunk from, or Dr. J's dunk.
That was,
right?
that was the ABA. Yeah, that was the ABA All-Star Game. Right.
That seared in your mind, though, right? Maybe that's a first step to, if you're going to be an All-Star and you're going to go, participate in these things.
Right.
Right?
But again, like I said, they just don't seem to be interested in that. They don't want to be bothered with it. And with respect to the three-point shooting contest and the dunk contest, that's not the game itself, which the last time we played one ended 211 to 186.
Yeah.
And whatever we watched last, you know, Sunday night was a debacle, really. I mean, it was difficult to follow, and Steph was still pulling up from half court in the midst of what was supposed to be something resembling a competition. But I want to move on. Did you expect the reaction you got when you announced that you guys were headed to Potomac Yards?
Yes and no. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Michael Wilbon, Tony Kornheiser, you know, they're over the top. You know, they have their playbook. Was I a villain for doing it? I mean, you don't like hearing stuff like that, right? But it's, you know, it's an old, tired playbook, but people glammed onto it. And we were going 3.5 miles away. That's where we were going. Michael Wilbon lives in Phoenix. Okay? Bradley Beal had a no-trade contract, and he got traded to Phoenix. And for him to go on and say that we should stay, I thought was very, very... I didn't think it was appropriate.
But all right, but to be fair, it wasn't just Mike and Tony.
No, but they started it, and now people were jumping on that bandwagon. But you know what? It's in the rearview mirror, and we're here. It's fantastic, right? And so all's well that ends well, and we have a lot of work now to do to make downtown D.C. come back to life.
That was from my podcast. By the way, they have a very, very interesting event this weekend, March 2nd. They are doing something called Legacy on Ice. It will benefit and support the families and loved ones affected by the plane crash at Reagan Airport on January 29th. The event's going to be co-hosted by the 1988 Olympic champion Brian Boitano, and it includes a lot of big-time skating stars. Go to CapitalOneArena.com to learn more about Legacy on Ice this Sunday. Tickets are available. The event starts at 3 p.m. But I thank Ted for all the time he gave to me, and there was a lot more if you want to go listen to it. It was from Wednesday's podcast, the Kevin Sheehan Show.com. So, what is John Allen really worth? I've got an answer when we come back.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ben Solak of ESPN put out a story this morning. NFL offseason trade offers for 7 players seeking deals. One of the players he discusses is John Allen. Earlier this week, we learned that John Allen and his agent were given permission to seek a trade. We guessed about what Washington could get back. I said probably a day 3 pick, maybe a conditional 4th rounder that could become a 3rd rounder if he plays at a high level, but more likely than not a day 3 pick. Well, it's even a little bit worse than that, according to Ben Solak. All right, Ben says that at this point, John Allen would, in a trade, and they've got, you know, suggested trades. He said the perfect trade for John Allen would come with the LA Chargers for a number of reasons, but I'll get into the compensation right now. Washington would get a 2025 sixth round pick for Allen and a 2026 conditional sixth round pick, which could become a 5th rounder. So let's just say he plays well. A 5th and a 6th would be kind of the equivalent to a 4th overall. But the Chargers would get a 7th round pick back. So, look, John Allen has hit that point in his career where the team giving him that permission, despite him coming back from a torn pec and actually not playing that poorly when he came back through the postseason, they don't think that he is anywhere near, you know, a situation where he could play at his best level or that he could ascend at this point. It's a poke for somebody outside of Washington to take on John Allen, and Washington gets big cap savings. Allen's, you know, cap hit is $22 million as currently constructed, but he's going to want a contract extension. So you'd have to trade something not significant because, in part, if you trade for him, you're more likely than not going to extend him. One thing that's going to have to definitely happen with John Allen in a trade is he's going to have to pass a physical and somebody's going to have to get a look at him physically, you know, to see where he is as he has just turned 30 years old. Another trade that Ben Solak in his story wrote about was Deebo Samuel, and he actually projected Washington as the team that the 49ers should trade Deebo Samuel to. We've talked about this before, but, you know, the 49ers really are going to suffer some pain by trading Deebo Samuel. They restructured his contract right at the beginning of the season, and it makes trading him rather daunting. He would cost $31 million in dead cap money if he were traded pre-June 1. If he's released Post-June 1, you can spread that out over two seasons. If he's traded post-June 1, you can spread that over, you kind of defray those costs over two seasons. But, you know, he wanted a restructure. They gave him the restructure. And now they've put themselves into a position that if they move on from him, they're going to have to get significant compensation to make it worthwhile, or they'll just cut him post-June 1. And that's going to be the game with Deebo Samuel here, because the 49ers, in trying to trade Deebo Samuel, they're going to look at it and say, well, we're not trading him without significant compensation back. The only way we're going to take a $31 million dead cap hit in 2025 is if we get something significant back for Deebo. So the game will be, do you trade something to make sure that when he is versus taking the chances that he'll pick you when he gets released? So Ben Solak writes that teams that, you know, he said, why, what can he offer another team? He writes, Samuel's play has certainly declined over recent seasons. Injuries have accumulated as a result of high usage. His superpower yards after catch is also tailed off. In a smaller role, he is still a handy threat in a spread offense that uses plenty of screens, or a Kyle Shanahan-inspired offense that frees him up over the middle of the field. But Samuel's days of a high-volume player are almost certainly over. Solak writes, which teams should be interested? Any team that heavily targets their receivers at or near the line of scrimmage has a good role for Samuel, who presents a running back-like challenge to opposing tacklers in space with his size, burst, and balance. The Commanders and Chiefs would both find a great role for him in their run-pass option games, as might the Bills or Colts. I also imagine all the branches of the Shanahan tree, Houston, Miami, Seattle, etc., will be interested. And then he writes the perfect trade outcome for Deebo Samuel. Washington gets Deebo Samuel. The 49ers get a 2026 fourth round pick, a 2027 conditional fifth round pick that could become a fourth rounder. So worst case, okay, no picks for this upcoming draft, but two future fourth rounders for Deebo Samuel. Man, I wouldn't make that deal if I were the 49ers for a $31 million cap hit. I'd cut him if I don't want him. Solak writes, the best outcome for the 49ers is that a team becomes suddenly desperate for a receiver during training camp. This also keeps Samuel on his existing deal, which is richer than the one he would sign in free agency. I really like the Chiefs as a landing spot, but the money won't work there. The Commanders make the most sense of the cap-rich teams, as Samuel could fill a useful role in their screen and RPO games, working his way into the backfield in Cliff Kingsbury's more creative offensive sets. The Commanders also see a good deal of zone coverage because of the danger Jaden presents as a runner. That plays into Samuel's strengths. I expect a trade is more likely to happen post-June 1 so that the trade capital will begin in 2026. Sign me up for a 2026 fourth rounder and a conditional 2027 fifth rounder that could become a fourth rounder for Deebo Samuel. I do think that the player is a player that is hurt or compromised on the injury report too often, but I do think he is one bad ass competitor, and he is tough. And he is tough after the catch. He is a big-time blocker and a willing blocker in the run game. And I do think and could imagine Cliff Kingsbury coming up with a number of ways to use Deebo Samuel. If you can get him for essentially a song, and to me, future fourth-round picks, maybe a fourth and a fifth-rounder, nothing from this upcoming draft, my window is to win a Super Bowl in the next 2 years, on Jaden's rookie deal, I'd be interested in that. Would you? 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Debo Samuel, projected in a hypothetical by Ben Solak on ESPN, to get traded to Washington for no picks this year, but a future fourth rounder in 2026 and a future fifth rounder that could become a fourth rounder depending on whether or not Samuels continues to play for the team in 2027. Would you do that deal? I would. 301-230-0980. I'd make it contingent upon him passing a physical. 301-230-0980. Imagine Debo Samuel at the line of scrimmage, yards after catch, digging out safeties in the run game, as Jay Gruden used to say Ryan Grant did. Debo Samuel's one of the toughest competitors in the NFL. Phone lines open. Kevin Sheehan Show. The Team 980 and theteam980.com. 301-230-0980. Ben Solak on ESPN doing some projected trades. Projected a trade of Debo Samuel from the 49ers to Washington. Washington would give up nothing in 2025. They would give up a fourth rounder in 2026, and they would give up a fifth rounder in 2027 that would be conditional, could go to a fourth rounder. Would you do it or not? Obviously, I want to make sure that he is physically fit, but I am viewing this window to be a legitimate go win the Super Bowl window. Debo Samuel gives you a lot when he's healthy. Big if. He's got to be on the field, which he typically is, but he isn't always on the field completely healthy. He's as competitive as anybody in the league. He's involved in the run game, and he's clearly tough as a yards-after-catch guy. Look, the future compensation, you know, I think most of you kind of understand this. Maybe not all of you do, but when you're talking about future picks, you're talking about, you know, the 49ers are not getting a positive return of rate, return on rate until 2027. You know, most NFL GMs will discount almost by a round a future pick. So consider that to be a part of the equation, that, you know, a 2026 and a 2027 pick would be considered to be not fourth rounders, but more like fifth rounders to GMs involved in dealing. So would you do it or not? Let's start with Gary in Upper Marlboro. Gary, go ahead.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Good, Gary.
Yeah, I would not do it. Okay, and here's the reason why. There's a reason why San Francisco would give up Debo Samuel for a fourth and a fifth round pick. Okay, that team knows him better than anybody.
Yep.
And we've been down this road before.
We have.
With Josh Norman, with Donovan McNabb, and you would hope that a fourth round pick and a fifth round pick, what Adam Peters and San Francisco was able to do when he was there, they got starters out of those two picks. And I'm just for the cost and, you know, with, like you said, his health concern, you know, not playing healthy all the time. I just think that I would pass on that. Fourth and a fifth just seems like if it looks too good, it's too good. And I would pass on that. And he doesn't really complete Terry McLaurin either. I mean, he doesn't add a skill set that we really don't have. He's not a And I would.
Okay, your phone's breaking up. By the way, totally understand your first point, and I always think that way, and we've talked about it over the years. Carson Wentz probably being the best recent example of, you know, why would, you know, the Colts at great expense want to get rid of him after one season. Debo Samuel, though, isn't a player that the 49ers would prefer to trade. They like Deebo Samuel. It's Deebo Samuel that wants to be traded. He wants out of San Francisco. I don't know if they'll accommodate that request or not. The 49ers, I'm sure, would like to get younger. But, you know, the 49ers also, to your point, they're in kind of a, they better get it done this year. They better stay healthy and win it this year, or the window not only is closing, but it might be shut. Let's go to our guy, Paulie. Paulie, what do you say?
Big guy, hell to the W,
what's
man.
Up?
Yeah. It's a no for me, too. Like, I don't want to give up compensation for anybody who's accumulating injuries. And, you might get him a pass or physical, but then the first game, he might come limping off the field, you know what I mean, after the first series. So, you know, I'd just rather draft a receiver and develop a receiver. Or, now, if you're talking about signing him after they cut him, I would be all for signing him if they cut him. But I'm not trying to give a compensation. And I know what you're saying, the GMs are thinking, like, a future pick, somewhere down the line, they probably can make another deal to recoup that pick back. So I understand that. But I just don't want to give up compensation for a guy that's seeming to be hurt all the time now. You know, and like,
yeah, I mean, future picks are discounted because of the uncertainty to them and the fact that you're not losing it right away and the team that's trading for it isn't gaining a positive return right away. They've got to wait for it. I hear you. I'm concerned the first time this came up. You know this. I'm like, I'm a no, because I was also thinking that the compensation would be for a Deebo Samuel, especially if they're going to absorb a $31 million dead cap hit, that they're looking for, like, you know, a night two pick. I wouldn't be in it for that. But two future fourth rounders that are really like fifth rounders, I think I might take a flyer if he's physically fit. Remember, he hasn't missed a lot of games. He's just been on the injury report a lot. He plays hurt.
My thing is, I'm like Doc Walker with this, man. You're not going to have me worrying about wide receiver in March. You know what I mean? Especially if you look at it last year. You know who was healthy all year last year? Who did a pretty solid job at the type of player that Samuels is? OZ. I'll bring OZ back on a one-year deal, and I think I can get the same type of production from OZ that Samuels. And it doesn't matter if he played any games. If he's not at full strength and you're not getting the full capacity out of him, you know, he might as well be sitting on the bench. And, you know, and his style of plays, man, that he never was a traditional wide receiver.
No.
So them hits has caught up to him, in my opinion. And I just wouldn't give up compensation for a player who continuously injured.
Two things. One, we're talking about wide receiver today because of this, you know, suggested trade. I'm much more about focusing on defense, like you know I am. Number two is Deebo Samuel's a better player than Zaccheaus, period. I mean, he's just a better player.
I know he is.
Okay.
I know he is, but availability is the best ability.
I get it.
Let's go get Zach Bond. Let's talk about that. Should we get Zach Bond and replace Bobby Wagner?
I just can't believe Philly would not re-sign him, but I'd love to get Zach Bond, no doubt. All right, I'll talk to you later. Thanks.
Right.
Let's go to Mark in Largo. Mark, would you do Deebo Samuel for two future fourth round picks in 2026 and in 2027?
Happy belated birthday, Kevin. My birthday's next Tuesday. Just wanted to get that out of the way first.
Okay, I hate birthdays,
really,
but go ahead.
But anyway,
yeah,
I know you do. No, and no, 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 and the hell to the no. Look, they're going to. Do you think they're going to release him? Because I think
I think there's a chance that happens for sure.
So why?
You're breaking up, Mark. Why would you? Because you don't know that he'd pick you. Because you don't know that you can sign him if he ends up being waived and has his choice as an unrestricted free agent.
Well, that's true. That's true, too. Well, let me ask you this.
What?
Would you be interested in making a trade for DK Metcalf?
Yeah, I saw that you were going to talk about that. I think I love DK Metcalf. I think he's actually a massive impact wide receiver. I just wonder whether or not his, and I think about a lot of these guys too, we have to think about this much more than we had to in previous regimes. Do they fit the culture? Do they fit the culture? Are these the kind of players that DQ and Cliff Kingsbury want and, you know, Joe Witt Jr. want? I don't know. I mean, Metcalf has been a problem at times. Debo, remember, got into it on the sideline a couple of times. Yeah. Thanks, Mark. Bro. Your phone's breaking up, man. Let me get to D.C. in Calvert County. D.C., go ahead.
Great day, Kevin, man. How you doing?
What's up, D.C.?
Not much, brother. Happy belated birthday to you as well. He's not going to be released, I would trade for Debo Samuels, because Debo Samuels obviously plays with the tenacity that we look for in our players. He also won't be the feature receiver and running back for years. He was the feature everything for the 49ers.
No doubt. He had years that he rushed for nearly 400 yards, 300 yards, you know, 40 carries, 50 carries. Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, we have a third down back. We have every down back, and then we also have a number one receiver. So he will fit in perfectly. And as far as the injuries go and everything, obviously, like I said, a lower workload. And then I like how the management by Dan Quinn and everybody, with people that were hurting everything, they didn't rush anybody back. They made sure they were healthy. And everybody that played, except with the exception of Brian Robinson, I don't know what he had going on. I think it was more a mental thing. They let players be healthy and play healthy.
Yep.
Or at least look that way, you know?
Good call, DC. I got to run him up against a hard break. Good call. Sorry I didn't get to all of you. Ben Standing will join me next. I'll ask him.